Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. They say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. They say that this world is unreal with no foundation, no God in control. They say it is produced of sex desire and has no cause other than lust. Purport. The demoniac conclude that the world is phantasmagoria. There is no cause and effect, no controller, no purpose. Everything is unreal. They say that this cosmic manifestation arises due to chance, material actions and reactions. They do not think that the world was created by God for a certain purpose. They have their own theory that the world has come about in its own way and that there is no reason to believe that there is a God behind it. For them, there is no difference between spirit and matter, and they do not accept the Supreme Spirit. Everything is matter only, and the whole cosmos is supposed to be a mass of ignorance. According to them, everything is void, and whatever manifestation exists is due to our ignorance and perception. They take it for granted that all manifestation of diversity is a display of ignorance. Just as in a dream we may create so many things which actually have no existence, so when we are awake we shall see that everything is simply a dream. But factually, although the demons say that life is a dream, they are very expert in enjoying this dream. And so instead of acquiring knowledge, they become more and more implicated in their dreamland. They conclude that as a child is simply the result of sexual intercourse between man and woman, this world is born without any soul. For them it is only a combination of matter that has produced the living entities, and there is no question of the existence of the soul. As many living creatures come out from perspiration and from a dead body without any cause, the whole living world has come out of the material combinations of the cosmic manifestation. Therefore, material nature is the cause of this manifestation, and there is no other cause. They do not believe in the words of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, Maya Dhakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. Under my direction, the whole material world is moving. In other words, among the demons, there is no perfect knowledge of the creation of the world. Every one of them has some particular theory of his own. According to them, one interpretation of the scriptures is as good as another, for they do not believe in a standard understanding of the scriptural injunctions. They say, who says? This chapter is describing the divine and demoniac nature, and actually most of this chapter is describing the demoniac nature. So demoniac people claim that there is no God in control, no ultimate truth, no foundation to anything. Sometimes people think they're being very modern and fashionable by being atheistic. But we see that the atheistic trend is described here by Lord Krishna 5,000 years ago. And actually it's an inherent trait in the conditioned souls, especially those who are particularly possessed of the demoniac nature. Apart from atheists, what we can call semi-theists, or persons who accept that there's God, but they're not very interested to know how he is the ultimate reality and the basis of everything. Or due to lack of knowledge of him, they simply speculate about his nature. As Srila Prabhupada often said, it's not enough to know, to accept that there is God and to say that he is great, but one should know how he is great. Otherwise, if we simply say God is great, but we don't really have any idea how he's great, then our idea of his greatness will be incomplete and imperfect, and thus not actually pertaining to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is complete and perfect. So the theistic traditions of the world, they mostly describe God as the creator of this world. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all creatures wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. All things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. So who made the snakes and the stool? I guess they ascribe that to Satan. Another silly idea. Another silly idea? So then they're not interested to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they often actually become inimical when we propose to describe Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So are such persons divine or demoniac? They may be out every day preaching to believe in God, but when we speak of Krishna, they become angry. And so we can only conclude that they're not real theists. A real theist should be happy to hear of Krishna. Jarasandha was present in the world when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago. And he worshipped Vishnu. And he was always trying to kill Krishna. He worshipped the deity of Vishnu, or Shalagram. But he hated Krishna. So what is the meaning of his worshipping Vishnu? He didn't accept that Krishna is Satyam. He is the truth. He is Pratishta. He is the foundation of everything. He is Ishvara. He is the controller of everything. So this demoniac atheistic tendency is inherent in every conditioned soul, actually. Those who are of divine nature, they don't come to this material world. Those who are adopting the divine nature, they are described in the beginning of this chapter as having the divine nature. Or some, like Arjuna, they come to this world, they're always possessed of the divine nature. Mashucha sampadam daivim apijatasya bharata. Krishna told Arjuna, don't worry, you have the divine qualities, you're born with them. But we have come to this material world forgetting Krishna, and therefore we invent so many philosophies to justify our forgetfulness of Krishna. So here Lord Krishna, he summarizes a wide field of atheistic ideas. There are many philosophers, atheistic philosophers, and they're all arguing with each other over how the supreme truth is, or there is no supreme truth. I especially find ironic and amusing that Buddhists, they say that everything is void, or rather there is no everything. Everything is nothing. It's difficult to describe because as soon as you start to describe it, some concept is there, but according to them, there's no concept even. Even there's no concept of nothingness. There's just nothing. But there are various schools of Buddhism who traditionally argue with each other over the nature of nothingness. This is absurdity cubed, or raised to the power of 100, if you like. You know what I'm talking about? Cubed means you multiply something by itself and then again by itself. Or raised to the power of 100 means you multiply by itself, by itself, by itself, by itself, 100 times. Simple mathematics, right? Everyone studies that at school, but then you forget it because you don't need it. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he mentions in a little more detail some of the various strains of atheistic philosophers. Philosopher, which is probably not translatable into Lithuanian, it's a word coined by Srila Prabhupada. There's another which, unless you know English, you won't get it, but the Sadaputa Prabhu, our scientist godbrother who's now departed this world, he would call the academic scholars squalors. Squalors. Well, I'll explain. Squalor means dirt, poverty, misery, like this, ignorance. So, it's not possible to, in a few lines, cover all the demoniac philosophies of the world, but we could classify them into two main groups. Pure atheism, which is always impure, but pure in the sense that unmitigated or uncompromised, unmixed. And atheism posing as theism, of which one strain I just spoke of. Within that, there are various strains also. So one I just spoke of. But the one which Krishna himself, and which all the acharyas, including Srila Prabhupada, have most opposed, is that which we group under the title Mayavad. Actually, two titles: Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. No, actually, Mayavadi. Shunyavadi will come more in the direct atheism category. Yeah, Shunyavad comes more in direct atheism. So, Mayavad, they say, well, there is an absolute truth, and there is a foundation, and there is Ishvara. But they say that the Satya and the Pratishtha, the absolute truth and the foundation, has no qualities, no form, no personality, no anything. Just undefined and undefinable spirit. And within Mayavad, there is also talk of Ishvara, but they consider Ishvara to be also not the supreme and also a phase of Maya. Of course, there's also a generalization because there are various strains of Mayavad also. But they all come to the same conclusion that there is, although the Mayavadis will say there is a truth, but then they say, well, it has no, there's nothing describable about it. So it comes to, it's like saying something like, well, there's no body, there's no nothing to see. It's a meaningless statement. Vedna mania bodh hoita nastik, veda shroy nastik yavad bodha ke adik. That the Buddhists, they're atheists because they don't accept the Vedas. But the Mayavadis who purport to accept the Vedas, but they propagate more or less the same ideas, they're worse than the Buddhists because they're pretending to be theists, but they're not. Now, the absurdity of these theories should be apparent to anyone. Most people are not interested in the truth. Most people, it's easy to manipulate them by various means. Even if someone's more powerful than you, simply by flattery you can manipulate them. People are very rich and they don't want to give any money for anything, but if you can catch them and just praise them up and down, inside out, can you give me some money? Or on some plea, they'll be inclined to give it because they feel so much ingratiated. As mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, that flattery is also used for seduction of women. So if a man says to a woman, you're the most beautiful woman that ever was born, which according to probability theory is highly unlikely, but she won't think logically, well, actually this isn't true. She'll think, oh, really? Oh. So people are not interested in the truth. It works the other way also. All this business of love, it's just a matter of talking what in English they call sweet nothings. It works the other way, means the woman also flatters the man and gets from him what she wants. So most people are not interested in truth. They're interested in... So anyway, these theories, they shouldn't appeal to any normal person. Devotees, sometimes they say, well, we should be more normal. In the madhouse, why... another reason that these theories, they have gained currency, is because they're systematically propagated in the educational system. Do you have religious education compulsory in the school in Lithuania? Not compulsory. Optional. I see. I think in the European Union they wouldn't allow it to be compulsory. Another humanistic body. Humanistic is a euphemism for atheistic. Yeah. Euphemism? You don't have that word? It means something stated to sound nice, but it's actually not very nice. Something stated in a diplomatic way. Just like if someone's highly eccentric, you might say, well, they're a little unusual. when everyone knows they're completely crazy. Yeah, in this asatyam apratishtam jagat, this is taught in the schools, as if it's taught as if a fact that there was a big bang, and then all of a sudden, here we are sitting in our school. That's compulsory, right? You have to learn that. You're taught as if it's a fact. And even the demons like this Stephen Hawking, they write books describing as if they actually understand what's going on. And religious education, that's optional. And it's taught as a theory. Well, some people believe this and some people believe that. Last night after the lectures, some people came to see me and they were saying, well, that's your position. So, that's very nice, you have your position. But I was saying, no, it's not my position, it's not my belief, it's a fact. There is actual truth, and everything else apart from that is flawed. So, being good disciples of the Asatyam Apratishtam school, these people were saying, well, no, there's no, you see, there's different traditions and they teach different things and, you know, it's just what anyone, it's a matter of belief, whatever you believe. So I gave a simple example. Well, certain things, they are axiomatic facts. So for instance, 1 + 1 = 2. If you have one apple and you bring another apple, then you have two apples. And as usual, in such cases, they try to argue against this. Well, it might be just your perception and all kinds. So people are indoctrinated in this atheistic theory. But actually no one deeply believes it. That is apparent in the laws of the land. That people believe that, everyone believes that some things are right and some things are wrong. For instance, an atheist, most atheists will think it's wrong to pick up a child and strangle him to death. But actually, if there's no ultimate basis of everything, and if there is, everything is simply a combination of matter, then what difference does it make whether the combination of matter in one particular, which is called a body, is moving and alive or whether it's dead? Actually, it's presumed that Hitler, the most prominent person of the 20th century, we could say, his theories were derived from Darwinism. Darwin, that it's the struggle for the survival and the survival of the fittest. So his theory was, well, we're better, we Germans are better than Poles and Ukrainians, and what to speak of Lithuania. So you know, we need to reproduce more, and so get the hell, you know, we're kicking you out, get out, and we're taking over your country. And there was based on Darwinism, there was a practice or a theory which was considered laudable called eugenics. Eugenics, with the idea is that, well, we should breed people to be the strongest, most intelligent, and like this. And those who are weak and crippled and lame and blind, you can, it's okay to, well, or a natural corollary of this theory was that the weak, the lame, the crippled, the blind, they should be sterilized or killed. So Hitler put this into practice. It's well known that he killed many Jews, who he also considered a scourge on the human race. But he also killed or sterilized many Germans who were lame, weak, blind, unintelligent, homosexual. So after World War II, eugenics lost popularity. But anyway, if everything is simply a combination of matter, as the atheists say, then what's the difference between right and wrong? It's only a mental construct without any basis, because there's no basis to anything. So there's no inherent difference in between Hitler and Jesus Christ, just they had different outlooks, that's all. Maybe Hitler was more realistic. But anyway, it's all meaningless anyway, because nothing has any meaning. Asatyam. But although some people may profess to such a theory, but they themselves don't follow it, because everyone has a sense of what is better and what is worse. So even if someone says there's no difference between right and wrong, but still, when they get hungry, they eat something. If there's no meaning, then why eat? Why do anything? Why exist? Just die. And one of the French existentialists, Camus, his idea was that, well, yeah, everything's meaningless. There's no real difference between life and death. So the only question left is whether to die now or just wait till it happens later. So he died when his car went off a cliff, and it's suspected that he deliberately drove off. But why do that? That means he found some meaning in death. He found it more meaningful to deliberately kill himself than not. So you can't avoid it. Even if you say everything is meaningless, that's still a statement. It means that you're trying to find some meaning even by a negative definition. All these negative philosophies, they have the same inbuilt logical fallacy. Just like people, if they say God is indescribable, that's also some description. Or if you say no, we cannot know anything about God, well, that's a statement about something knowing about him. We know that we can't know anything, so it's self-defeating. So in the ongoing arguments between theists and atheists, there is what is called the moral argument for the existence of God. The fact that we perceive that some things are right and some things are wrong suggests that there is a universal principle of rightness and wrongness, which is independent of times, places, circumstances, various civilizations, and so on. The United Nations Charter of Human Rights is based on that principle. We accept as self-evident facts that all human beings, regardless of race, gender, age, etc., are all equal, which is a bunch of rubbish. Or they have the same equal rights, which is... as I was saying, that's the very fact that there are these differences means that not everyone, you don't have equal rights. As Srila Prabhupada, just for example, Srila Prabhupada would often point out, in regard to the claim that women and men should have equal rights, he would point out that, well, women have children, men don't. So where's the equality? There's a difference right there. Inherent built-in difference. Men should make a demonstration. Why don't we have equal rights? Scientists should arrange that we bear children also. Anyway, that's a tangential point. But the fact that there is a sense of right and wrong. Without that, if we say, well, if we say that everything is simply come into being by chance, is nothing but matter, then Hitler didn't do anything wrong, because there's nothing wrong. It's just there's matter is interacting without any reason or cause. So if one combination of chemicals, which is perceived to be one human being, picks up another combination of chemicals, which is called a loaded gun, and shoots another combination of chemicals, which is called another human being, there's nothing wrong, because there is nothing wrong. Of course, the humanists may argue, well, it's not good for the human race if there's if there's no law and order, so we have to have these laws. But what is the meaning of anything being good for the human race? It's a value judgment, but if asatyam, apratishtam, if it's true that there's no reality or no basis to anything, then there's no meaning in the good of the human race or philanthropy or education or ecology or any of these things which are lauded by humanists. So this is a powerful argument for the existence of an underlying reality. Of course, everything in existence is a powerful argument for the existence of the underlying reality, who is Krishna. Or we could say the impersonal Brahman is the underlying principle of the material cosmos. But then, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, the underlying basis of the impersonal Brahman is Krishna. So, any questions about this? Do we have facility for questions to be sent? People can ask online. Yeah, so watch and see if any questions come up. Is anyone there watching? Four. Yesterday was Sunday. It was a good time, but now it's Monday and it's early in the morning in America and it's working time in India. So yeah, any questions about this, please?
What is your opinion about Kabbalah philosophy?
Well, whenever people ask me what is my opinion, my rejoinder is that it doesn't matter at all what my opinion is. Because who am I? I'm just a tiny little being. So we don't go by opinions. We go by facts as are revealed in Shastra by the Acharyas. Kabbalah philosophy, that's connected with the Judaism, is it? I don't know hardly anything about it apart from a conversation I had once on a plane from London to New York with a Jewish man. So what is Kabbalistic philosophy? Can you explain it in a few words? And why the particular interest in that when there are so many philosophies in the world?
Jeigu lyginant Kabalą su Dantūne, tai viskas sutampa. Pradžia ir Krishna. Jeigu jūs palyginat pirmąjį Kabalą, tai jau viskas sutampa.
Anyway, the thing, there are so many philosophies in the world. You know, if we had someone who is highly read in various philosophies, they could maybe give us an overview of them. But I'm quite sure when you say Kabbalistic philosophy, there's not one. There must be various schools within that. So if it recognizes that there is an ultimate reality, the ultimate foundation to everything, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then very good. And then if they can find that that is Krishna, that will be better. Otherwise, dharma projita kaitava atra. This Srimad Bhagavatam rejects all kinds of cheating philosophies and religions. Regarding this, or as a commentary on this, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a Bengali couplet. Prithivite jato kata dharma nama chale bhagavata kahe taha paripurna chale. That whatever is spoken of in the world in the name of religion, according to the Bhagavatam, it's all completely cheating. Even Vyasadeva was casted or rebuked by Narad for having compiled all the Vedas without clearly delineating Vedyam Vastavam, the actual object of knowledge in the Vedas, which is Krishna. So we're not interested in philosophy in the way that the few people in the world who claim to be interested in philosophy are. Our approach is different. Most people are interested in philosophy as some kind of intellectual exercise. They take pleasure in wandering on the intellectual or mental platform, intellectual platform. But we are interested in understanding what is the ultimate truth, what is the ultimate basis of everything. From what I could understand, Kabbalism is another kind of mysticism, nothing clear. Bhagavatam from the very beginning is clear. Janmadhyasya yataha. The absolute truth is the source of all emanations. Etova imani jayanti bhutani yena jatani jivanti yat prayat abhisang vishanti tat vijigya sasva tat brahmeti. This janmadhyasya yataha is a synopsis of the statement in Taittiriya Upanishad describing the ultimate reality. The ultimate truth is that from which everything comes, that in which everything exists, and that into which everything ultimately merges. That is the proper subject for inquiry. That is the ultimate truth. So, Hare Krishna, should we finish there? No? You have a question? No question? You have a question? Yes, please.
We are living in this world who is full of mad personalities, like you have said, and should the devotee's child go to school for material education, school, university, and because all these things are so temporary, should they go for it?
It's not really connected to the class, this question. Better they get real education in Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, rather than Darwinism. Yeah, okay.
Guru Maharaj, so is this Mayavadi philosophy is some kind of defensive the conditioned souls that defend themselves?
Okay. Mayavad, is it conditioned souls defending themselves against Krishna consciousness? Yeah, all so-called philosophy in the world is a device by which people will feel satisfied that I'm doing the right thing while they're doing the wrong thing. It's all hypocrisy. If everything is meaningless, then why do they have to write books about it and describe it? Why do they feel compelled to do so? Everyone is meant for surrendering to Krishna, but if they say, well, there is no Krishna, then there is no ultimate basis, there is no supreme reality, then we don't have to surrender. Or they will say, there is God and we have to surrender it to him, but hey, you know what? We're all God. Which means if you say everyone's God, then there's no meaning to God and there's no meaning to surrender. People are hypocritical and insincere. Who is that one Greek philosopher? Yes. Diogenes. He was going around with a lamp in the daytime. Yeah, I think that was his name. Sounds like a
Dionysus.
Is it? Sounds like a Lithuanian. He's going around with a lamp in the daytime, which seems like a stupid thing to do. So if people would ask him what he was doing, he said, I'm looking for an honest man. Suggesting that to look for an honest man is as absurd as going around with a lamp in the daytime. I guess he thought he himself was honest. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Please study this Bhagavad Gita as it is, very carefully, and Srimad Bhagavatam.